And welcome back to Coast Life Force, the scientific basis. Claude Swanson's work, MIT and Princeton educated physicist. He has worked as a conventional applied physicist for more than 20 years. He has conducted extensive research into the physics of the paranormal. Now, this research has involved scientific measurements and haunted houses, experiments in remote viewing and psychokinesis, and testing of new devices which can measure these very strange forces. Claude was on with me back in June of 2008 as we talked about the synchronized universe, and here he is again on Coast to Coast AM. Claude, how are you?
I'm doing great, George. Great to be back.
Likewise. Yeah. Looking forward to this tonight. I always enjoy talking to you. You open up our minds. You know,
you just... Well, thank you. You have over the years, too, so we're all very grateful to you, George.
Tell me a little bit about you. You know, you were on with me back in 2008. A lot of new listeners have popped in since then. Tell us a little bit about your background and your current projects you've been working on.
Sure. I started out as a, you know, sort of a naive, credulous scientist like so many, and believing what I was being taught in school, and that's what I went through the whole MIT, Princeton, and graduate school and postgraduate work. And somewhere along the lines, after that, I began hearing rumors about remote viewing, and that was what was my first clue that something was missing in my conventional scientific education. And once I began digging into it, I found more and more things that were strange, that did not quite fit the paradigm that I'd been taught in school. And I tend to be very thorough when I go about these things, mm-hmm. so it was kind of surprising to find out that so many of the beliefs that we are taught in our Western scientific education are missing pieces. And part of it is that our scientists don't really look in the strange places. We set up laboratory experiments that are, you know, based on certain conditions. But if we go into a strange place, like a haunted house, oftentimes energies are encountered that don't fit our current theories. And that was what was exciting to me. Today, I've just finished the second book, The Life Force, which tries to put a sort of a scientific basis underneath of paranormal phenomena to explain how these things happen.
Our mailroom, by the way, needed a crane to bring it up to me in my office. Whoa, did you put some work into that one?
I did not intend the book to be so big, believe me. When I started this book to be volume two after the first one came out in 2003, and I thought, well, it'll take a couple of years and be just a snap. I thought I knew most of what had to be done. What I discovered as I began delving into it is this has been a very, very active time for discovery in our sciences, especially in the forefront and the border area sciences. And so many things have been figured out in the past 10 or 15 years that all play into how the paranormal works and how these extraordinary energies work. And what I ended up with, without expecting it, was an understanding of life. And I almost called the book The Secret of Life. I thought that was too presumptuous, but it's kind of how it feels, because what we end up with now, for the first time maybe, is a comprehensive understanding and description of what makes a living being, even in part the spiritual interactions. And so I could talk about that later, but
sure.
I had not expected this was going to go so far, and I kept wanting it to be over and me to be able to say the end, but it just took this long.
Do you find yourself going against the grain, against the scientific grain?
Well, yes, but there are amazing scientists around the world who are going the same direction I am. And I think the real difficulty is that, particularly in America, we don't hear enough about that work. In this book, for example, I talk about the Russian torsion work, which started in the 50s. It got government support for 30 years. We wouldn't know about it except for glasnost and perestroika when it all came out in the early 90s. But in America, there's very little that's talked about it, even though that's kind of becoming a more or less standard science over there. In the same way, acupuncture, of course, is natural for Oriental doctors.
Sure.
But in this country, it's only the past 20 or 30 years, and still it's pushed off to the side as a, you know, as a marginalized alternative medicine. But
well, we're going to take this quick break, Claude, and come right back with you. Full program with Claude Swanson tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Claude Swanson. His website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Claude, when you wrote The Synchronized Universe, why did you call it that?
It's basically from a physics model. I tried to understand how it could possibly be that these strange things happen. How is it possible that certain healers and certain psychics can walk through walls? I know some of these things may sound strange to people, but in China there are experiments with experts who are very adept at causing objects to go through walls. We know the Philippine healers; some of them, of course, may be fooling people with chicken gizzards. But there are some very well documented cases where people in trance state are able to pass their hands through solid objects. So we have lots of solid cases like that, and the problem is, how can you explain it? But if you go over the wide range of psychic phenomena, it comes to the conclusion that matter is not the solid stuff that we're used to thinking about. It's not billiard balls. Most of the atom is empty, and that the particles are very tiny, and they're wiggling around in a huge space. And it's really, what is it that makes an atom seem solid? And that's where the synchronized universe idea came from, that if particles only interact when their motions at the smallest scales are synchronized with each other, that would explain how it is that these objects can seem solid, and yet it's possible to turn off those forces by shifting the frequency or shifting the phase. And if you can do that, then you can have many parallel universes all in the same place because they have different frequencies. It ends up explaining a lot of the things that are seen in the paranormal.
How did these practitioners, Claude, pick up on this? I mean, how did they know? And there are a number of people out there, we'll talk about a few of them later on specifically, but how did they learn this?
I think that our consciousness also perceives the outside world by synchronization. I think that when we are born, when we grow up and become acclimatized to what we call reality, that our consciousness becomes synchronized with the material world around us as part of that process. And so it's kind of built in and instinctive. And most of us say, well, we can't change the physical reality because we're so used to staying synchronized with the matter that we deal with, the forces, et cetera. But there are some people, and shaman, yogis, certain extraordinary people who have learned how to control their state of consciousness, who seem to be able to shift realities. They can walk through walls. They can teleport. They can do all kinds of things. And these unusual people are well documented at this point. And it seems to be control of how the mind focuses and synchronizes with the external reality that seems to be the key. So I think that it's partly built into our system, but through training, it's possible to unlearn it and to learn how to control that focus process. And that's part of what the second book talks about, because I mentioned quantum consciousness, you know, the understanding of what is consciousness. And I think that the way the mind synchronizes with external reality is a big part of consciousness.
Are you convinced, Dr. Claude Swanson, that psychokinesis, levitation, teleportation, OBEs, all of this is beyond a shadow of a doubt real? It happens?
Yes. Yes, I am. There's enormous amounts of evidence for all of these things. And, of course, in each case, you have to go dig. You know, you won't find the best evidence laid out in the public media, unfortunately.
Well, no.
I wrote my book as a way to try to pull together best evidence to show that there is very solid evidence. For example, the Princeton Pear Lab worked for 30 years and more collecting data on psychokinesis, the ability of people to affect objects at a distance. Likewise, on ESP and remote viewing, they did similar amounts of over the cumulative effect of all their data over 30-some years is now 35 trillion to one odds against chance that these things are real.
You know, on the face of it, I'm going to tell you a quick story. Both of us would say, nah, come on, didn't happen. But there was such a conviction in this person's voice when he called me a couple of years ago that he was driving, and for whatever reason, it looked like he was going to go head-on into another oncoming car. 50, 60 miles an hour, at that rate, you're dead when you do a head-on collision, because that's like 100 or 120 miles an hour.
Yep.
When you both hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, George, there was no way I was going to be able to steer my way out of it. I was trapped on the left, and there was a truck on the right, and I was stuck. And this car was coming right at me. Now, this is where initially we'd say, these things don't happen. They can't happen. He said, seconds before I was going to collide with this other car, less than that, I looked at the eyes of the other person in the other car who had this look of panic on his face, as he should.
Uh-huh.
And he said, and I did too, and I just braced myself, closed my eyes. I knew it was all over. He did too. And he said, it never happened. He said, I came, my eyes opened. I had gone through the car.
Uh-huh.
He had gone through mine without one scratch.
Uh-huh.
And we both stopped our cars, got out and looked at each other, and just, like, drove away.
Yep.
How does that happen?
I've started collecting stories like this the past couple of years. I didn't used to believe it either. It was probably Richard Bartlett and his Matrix Energetics got me thinking about this, because he has the theory that we have these, you know, various possible parallel realities, and we can shift from one to the other as a way of healing. And I realized when I heard that this was consistent with my synchronized universe model. It's exactly the same model. And so for the first time, I said, well, then maybe it's real. And I've talked to shamans, and I've been talking to various kinds of healers, and this thing happens more than you'd ever think. And in the kahunas of Hawaii, you know, traditional healers there, for them, this is the normal way they heal. They often heal bones, for example, broken bones, instantaneously, you know?
Oh, yeah. I used to, years ago, study hands-on healing as much as I could. I was obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I came away with the conclusion that if you understand it, if you know how to get into the groove with it, you can do remarkable things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out there. It is, as you say, a life force, and it's huge, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the strange thing. I mean, if we just assume that life continues with cause and effect in normal Western physics, and our consciousness stays focused on this one reality, then these things don't happen. But if we are able to shift into an altered state, if you like, a state where all these possibilities, you don't focus on one possibility, but you allow them all to be present, these things seem to happen fairly frequently. And that state is the state where you create the special energy that we call chi or prana or the life force. That's what's present, or subtle energy. That's what's present when we enter these altered states. And that's where the physics laws all of a sudden become like Alice in Wonderland. So that's the exciting part to me.
Let's get into some of the topics that you cover in the life force.
Okay.
Go ahead. The chi, explain that.
Well, of course, as you know and the listeners know, chi is something that in Oriental medicine is something very familiar. They talk about it as the life force there, and it's been around for thousands of years. It's part of their standard medicine, but in Western physics, we would say it doesn't exist, and we don't have a way to describe what it is. What I have been doing in this book is trying to figure out what it is and put in a context where Western science can understand it. And I can say it in about three or four sentences, probably. Essentially, there are two polarities, two types of this energy. And one tends to push time forward. One tends to slow it down and pull it back. One tends to increase entropy, which is a tendency toward randomness. One tends to work the other way, to neg entropy, to building, to creating structures. And that's one of the reasons why humans are so efficient. So these two different forms of energy are both present, and they are qualities of the vacuum. We talk about, you know, the vacuum energy of space, the zero-point energy. What we now know is that that energy has a structure to it. It's not just random and amorphous. There are aspects and forms that occur in that vacuum that are very special, and that's where the chi occurs. And there's these two types. The Russians would say the right-handed spin energy, which they call torsion, is the part that tends to decrease entropy, tends to help structures to build, like in our proteins and our metabolism. The other structure tends to speed things up and tends to go the other way. So in a nutshell, that's at least one piece of
one
that.
Piece of many.
Yeah. The cartoon that I put in the book, you know, of the six blind scientists and the elephant tries to illustrate this point, because subtle energy or chi occurs in many different forms. It affects every other physical process, every other physical force. And so if you are a scientist looking at this from one lens or one perspective, you'll say it's a wall or it's a tree trunk or it's a rope. You know, you won't see the whole picture. That's been one of the difficulties with fully appreciating this energy.
As a scientist, Claude, I'm fascinated by your thoughts of quantum consciousness as well. I bet when you were going to MIT and Princeton, you didn't think about that.
No, that's right. The funny thing about our Western mindset, and I assume it's still the same today, is it's kind of mechanical. You know, you focus on the machines and you have your equations, and you kind of think that the world follows these rules, and the human mind is just sort of this messy thing that you want to pretend is not there, not important. And now we're entering a realm where we find that when consciousness and these energies or subtle energies are present, they can be the dominant effect. And for example, Bill Tiller has described experiments where he builds up this energy in his lab to high levels. And all someone has to do is take some data or just go in with a bad mood, and it messes up all the results. So we're living in a time now where the human being is part of the experiment.
What made you decide to go for it and go with this book, Life Force, at this time?
I think the biggest thing is that when my first book, Synchronized Universe, came out, as you know, it has a lot of examples of different types of paranormal phenomena, what's sort of best evidence for these different things. And every one of them pretty much violates Western physics. But as a scientist, that to me is just a starting point. That's not the ending. I wanted to understand how we can make a science out of this, how we can integrate all these examples into a new science which can explain these phenomena. Also, I have a lot of dear friends in Colorado who belong to an organization called ICEM, which stands for International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine. It's basically subtle energy. And a lot of them are scientists. A lot of them are very interested in these subjects, too. A lot of them are healers. And every energy healer has the same, he works with the same energy, the same chi energy. But a lot of them, I mean, we have no science to explain what this stuff is or how it's possible for an energy healer to affect someone, to heal somebody thousands of miles away. And yet we have lots of evidence that they do. So a lot of these people are very curious about how this stuff works. So that's been part of my encouragement.
Did you do any work into how Adam, he's been on the program before, he was a kid, he's not a little kid anymore.
Right.
But he has the ability to heal that way.
I know of Adam. I have his books. I haven't done any specific research on him. I have been working with Qigong masters and other healers like that, that do work where you can measure their effects. But I have not met Adam or talked to him personally.
Remarkable young man, Claude.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to do that.
Truly remarkable indeed.
Yeah.
In your work, The Life Force, you've talked about painting a picture of our existence, of what you call the secret of life.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that secret?
At a certain level, I have. I mean, I'm sure the reason I avoided the title is that I think that we exist on many levels, and I talk about that in the book. The Theosophists would say there is the astral dimension and the mental and the causal, but each aspect of our personality and of our activity has its own dimension, its own level of reality. In the same way that in the synchronized universe, you can have parallel realities, but then there are also these higher levels where consciousness takes on different aspects. And so there's a limit to how far I can see. And so I'm looking at what I would call the physical, the etheric, and the astral, which is sort of the emotional parts that most healers work with. So that's my limitation. But within that, I found that there's a great deal that's been discovered the past 20 or 30 years. For example, Fritz Albert Popp's work in Germany with biophotons. He's proven that the DNA creates biophotons and also receives biophotons, little packets of light that pass through the body, and that basically enable the DNA to communicate and to control the physical processes within the body. What's more interesting is that this light is coherent. It acts like laser light. So it creates a hologram within the body. It's like a hologram that's a pattern, a blueprint of how the organs are supposed to be growing. And the acupuncture meridians are these very important channels that most Western scientists don't know much about, but in Eastern Europe they've discovered they're actually waveguides for millimeter waves, as well as a few other things. The Korean scientists have been able to photograph them and show that they also carry stem cells that move. And as you know, stem cells, whenever they can turn into whatever type of tissue is needed. So they're really, really important for healing. The most important part that I won't say I've discovered, but at least among Western writers, there aren't people talking about this, is the torsion field, which is the Russian name for this subtle energy. And it exists even when electromagnetic energy is absent. For example, these biophotons, every time you make one, the DNA makes one, it also makes a torsion wave. Outside the body, most of the electromagnetic energy is kept inside the body, but outside the body is this torsion field, and that is what makes up the aura. And so we now have an answer to this long-standing question about the aura. What is it? It's a coherent holographic field of torsion waves. And what is long-range healing? That's when an energy healer takes that torsion field and sends it and interacts with the torsion field of the client.
Perfect.
And so that doesn't take the energy that biophotons would, but it still carries the information.
He or she knows how to move through that field and make it work for the victim, I guess, or the patient. And, you know, there have been a lot of events I go to, and there are always people there who take photographs of your auras. I have not done that yet. I have to. I would just really like to see that. They can tell by colors and everything. But those practitioners, those healers, they can sense the aura, see the aura. I'll tell you a story when we come back from the break about Edgar Cayce. And if they see breaks in it, Claude, they know that somebody's ill or sick.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's truly remarkable. Where do people pick up this book, Life Force?
Right now, the best place is Amazon.com, or go to my website, synchronizeduniverse.com, and you'll find several links there. If you click on one of those links, it'll take you right to it. Unfortunately, Life Force, the name, is not all that unique. There are many other books also with those words in the title. So it's easier to go to my website, and I'll take you to the correct one. If you search on Amazon, you may end up in the wrong
As long as they put in your name, Claude Swanson, they'll get it.
That should get it.
More to come. We'll talk about auras. We'll talk about Edgar Cayce. We'll talk about the Princeton Pear Lab, and that stood for, of course, Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research. I believe it's closed now. We'll be back. Back to auras for a moment, Claude. Edgar Cayce, yeah, as he was getting into an elevator many years ago, spotted a group of people. He always can read auras. He didn't see any around them. It frightened him, scared the heck out of him. He backed up. He did not go down the elevator. That elevator cable snapped. Those people all died.
Yep.
Unbelievable story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, if you can read it, go with it, right?
It's exactly. Yeah. And, one of the early pioneers in Western studies of subtle energy was named Baron von Reichenbach back in the 1840s and 50s. He spent several decades studying subtle energy, and he found people who were, he called, sensitives, who could see the energy around people, and did many, many studies with how this energy behaved. And it's one of the foundational pieces of science for how we have these rules about this energy. But he made this comment that if we could see, if all of us could see this energy, the aura around us, we would be at a much higher level of behavior toward each other and a much higher level of consciousness, because we would all act differently if we could perceive the energies in each person. So I totally agree with that.
Back to the Princeton Pear Lab, mm-hmm. the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research. Now, that's closed now, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Why they close? Funding? What happened?
I think so. I'm not really up on the details. I think they've started some new venture elsewhere, but I don't know a lot about what that's called.
I know the laboratory's founder, Robert Jean,
right,
said, this is a great quote, "If people don't believe us after all these results that we've produced, then they never will."
yeah, exactly. I know. I mean, that they practice pure science. That is what science is supposed to be about. You take the data, and if the results come out different from your theory, then you should change the theory. They have the data.
Long distance healing. How far can you heal?
There seem to be no limits. We've certainly have examples of 10,000 mile distances for long distance healing. And it's not just healing, it's also various forms of PK. Some of these same Qigong masters who can heal at those great distances have also demonstrated they can change the radioactive decay rate of radioactive materials. They can deflect laser beams. And they can change the properties of water. So this ability seems to work not just for healing, but for a wide variety of phenomena where we're changing the physics.
Claude, how important is the recipient's belief in all of this?
I don't think it's important because what a lot of these experiments, there's an inanimate object, a decaying americium-237 or something, some source that is doing the decaying. We also have experiments such as Bengston's, where he took skeptics and taught them a procedure which they were send energy to little mice in cages, never allowed to touch the cages, though. And, of course, the mice didn't understand belief, and yet he found this was a very effective means of healing. One of the interesting side effects is that he discovered that if you place a mouse that has been given cancer in an area where you have been doing healing on other mice, just the proximity of the first mouse causes the healing rate to be much higher than you would expect. So there's a proximity effect from healing.
You mean just if he got in that range, that energy is still there, it would help him.
Exactly. That's right.
God, that's something else. I'm going to tap into you for physics for just a moment.
Okay.
Is it safe to say that the laws of physics are always the same no matter where it is in the universe, no matter where we are?
Well, it depends on what you mean by the laws. I mean, if by the laws you mean that you will take into account differences in place to place, then they're the same. But if you don't take into account the differences in different regions of space, then they'll be different. And that's one of the things I believe that we're seeing. Astronomers talk about dark energy and dark matter, areas where it seems like there's extra gravity, and yet we can't find the matter that's causing it. Other places where there's a repulsion, where things are being pushed apart, and they can't explain why that can happen at all. But it turns out that subtle energy, this exact force that the Russians call torsion, does have that effect. It has two polarities. One pushes things away. One pulls them toward. And it appears to exist very naturally in the vacuum of space. And therefore, you would expect there'd be patches with more of one or more of the other. Not only that, but it turns out that the like energies attract more of the same. So it's not like electromagnetism, where opposites attract. This is the same attracts. So if you have an area of space with more of the right-handed spin, it will attract more of the same. So you would expect to find space to be somewhat lumpy with areas of dark energy and areas of dark matter. So this is an interesting theory that is coming out of the subtle energy work, but appears to have application for cosmology on the cosmic scale. And now if you go to some of the observations, like Richard Hoagland, Wilcox talking about evidence that we're seeing anomalous heating of planets in the solar system. And how can that be? Well, if we're going into a region where the relative background energy of the right-handed versus left-handed spin, the torsional spin, the chi, is different in the background, that will cause effects of exactly this type.
Who came up with all this, for it to all work, to fit like a puzzle?
Well, I think a lot of credit goes to a man named Nikolai Kozarev, who was an astrophysicist who came up with the idea of torsion in the 1950s. He was obsessed by the nature of time. Now, what is it? He had spent 13 or 14 years in Stalin's gulag in the 30s, so he had a lot of time on his hands. He also
too much time, probably.
Well, I think it did him some good.
Yeah.
But he also got to know the shaman in the Altai Mountains area in Russia, and they gave him a different perspective. I think they helped him to look with the intuitive perspective much better. So he came up with a lot of these ideas, and he began testing them, first on his own, then other scientists began testing them. By 1970, when Sheila Ostrander and Lynn Schroeder were over there writing their books, like Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, they spent an entire chapter interviewing him. And by that point, he was already accepted and admired in Russia for his discoveries. After that, it's pretty clear from other scientists that at least 20 years of large government programs went on further testing this work. It's amazing that all this has happened, and yet in America, we know nothing about it.
Tell me a little bit about torsion field physics.
Okay. I will tell you as best I can understand.
Yeah, I was going to say, make sure we can understand.
Yeah, well, I'll do that too. One of the difficulties is that these programs probably may have been classified programs in Russia, okay, back during that time period. We don't really know exactly, but what we do know is that when Glasnost and Perestroika broke out in 1991 or so, the papers came flooding out. A lot of the scientists suddenly were out of work, and they began appealing to the West, and there was a whole opening of information. And that's how we know as much as we do. A lot of those papers have never been translated into English, however, so we only have a fraction of the information. So one of the reasons it took me so long to write this book is that I had to really fit the puzzle pieces together from every possible source I could find and do the best I could, and I may still find there's some pieces missing when it's all said and done. That being said, the model appears to be that in the vacuum of space, there's two types of energy waves that travel through, that propagate. One spins to the right, one spins to the left. They have to do with conserving angular momentum. Every object which spins the Earth has angular momentum. Electrons and protons do. It appears that whenever one of those changes its direction of spin, it flips its spin into some other axis, that creates a torsion wave, which then propagates through space. So torsion waves are created by changing of spins.
And what changes the spin?
Well, it could be interaction bumping into another particle would do it, for example. Electromagnetic forces will also do it. If you have an electron, you hit it with an electromagnetic wave, you accelerate the electron. When you accelerate it, you also cause its spin to change. So electromagnetism actually creates torsion.
Doesn't Venus spin the opposite way that we do?
Could be. I don't know the details on that. But the bottom line is that torsion waves are present everywhere in space, and they're constantly affecting particles at the very small levels. So, there's very little energy in a torsion wave compared to electromagnetism, which is one of the key ingredients, but they carry information. So it's a whole new area of science that we really need to get caught up on.
Why would it be important to the study, for example, of what you're doing, the synchronized universe, life force?
One of the things, it appears that if you look at the deepest level in what goes on in particle physics, you'll probably find that torsion particles and these spin exchanges probably to be the most important, the deepest process going on. In a way, I think of it as making up the fabric of space. So electromagnetism and the quantum effects actually occur at a higher level. Because experiments seem to indicate that these torsion waves travel faster than light. They may have two components that travel at light going forward and backward in time, and then a combination that travels at infinite speed. What we do know is the Russians have built telescopes that are designed to detect this torsion energy, and they find that you get an image of the sun at the place you would see it in the sky, which is what took 8 minutes for the light to get here.
Right.
You also see the two other positions, one where you would see it if light were traveling backwards in time, a different position in the sky, and you get a third position, which is its exact instantaneous position, as though light traveled at infinite speed.
So they basically see it three times.
Three images of it in a torsion image. So torsion has some very special properties that make it great for communication. If you want to talk to somebody on Mars, you don't want to wait, 20 or 30 minutes or however long
right.
it takes. If you have a signal that can propagate much faster, you'd probably like to use it. Well, the Russians have already built communication systems with torsion waves. And they patented them.
My gosh, have we done anything like that here?
Not that I'm aware of.
Could this be used for time travel?
There are Russian scientists who are attempting to build machines. Well, they've built them, in fact. Because the torsion waves have an effect on time, one wave pushing you forward in time, one pushing you backwards, they've built little chambers where you send waves of just one polarity into the chamber to build up a concentration, and they found that time can either slow down by a couple percent or speed up by a couple percent. And there are a lot of implications for life forms that they have seen some of the animals die because of this whole quandary that there are many possible futures, but they want to go backwards in time. Trying to repeat that path can be tricky. So they're already encountering some of those quandaries involving time travel, even though they're right now still talking about a few percent change.
But you're saying the Russians are trying to work on some kind of time travel apparatus.
They have built them, and they have reported on them. Yeah, Chernobrov is the principal person I'm aware of who has written about
it. Do you think they really have this?
Well, I think that I believe they really built these things, and I think their capabilities are limited to a couple of percent. I don't know beyond that what's possible.
Well, you got to start somewhere.
Got to start somewhere, right?
That's dramatic.
Yep.
It's too bad we're so far behind and stuff like that.
Yep.
I know you've done some work with Stan Romanek.
Yes.
I want to preface that and then get your take on him.
Okay.
We had him on the program with his incredible story of an alien peering through a window of his daughter's room. And he set up a camera and he got this video of this bizarre-looking creature. We brought him on the program, and then he agreed to take a polygraph test. We hired a polygraph examiner, certified examiner, who did the test with Stan. Stan was willing to do it, and he did it. And we hired a polygraph examiner out that way, Colorado, I believe. And the polygraph examiner said he failed the test. Now, Stan, in Stan's defense, he claims that he had taken heavy sedation, and it affected him, and he didn't like the polygraph examiner or the questions, but that's his side of it. The polygraph examiner stands by his story about the little alien and that he didn't believe Stan was telling the truth based on what Stan said. Where do you come in with this?
I got to know Stan because I lived in Colorado. I lived in Colorado Springs, I think, around the same time when he did, and then I also was in Northern Colorado when he did, and I gave a lecture there, and some people said, well, boy, you should get to know Stan Romanek because he is getting equations in some of his encounters, and so that's when I first heard about him, and it was probably, I took my time in getting to know him better because with anything like that, I like to kind of understand the people involved and get a sense of them. So it was probably a kind of a year before I got closer involved with the case. But I got to know Stan and his wife and children pretty well. And I would say to the extent of being friends. And I believe he's honest. I believe that's just my assessment of him as a person. And then I began looking at some of the equations, and I found I could learn things from the equations. And that's one of the of my tests. You expect your dealing with a superior race, you'd hope they'd have something intelligent and interesting to say. And I found his equations to be interesting and helpful. And I know Stan well enough that he didn't invent them. You know, he could not come up with these things. In fact, I just recently figured out one of the other equations that was kind of lingering, the backwards equation, the last week or so. I think I understand what that's about, too. But what So I find the case credible, and I have taken polygraphs, too, and I don't do well on polygraphs. I'm a very nervous person, and I have an active imagination, and I don't, you know, I can understand why people can fail polygraphs, so I don't, you know, I wouldn't write him off based upon just that.
Well, a lot of people I've talked to who know him all attest by him and, you know, claim he's an honest guy, good guy, and, you know, and I'm not questioning that at all. I'm just saying the results are you didn't pass that test.
Right. And I think for me, beyond all of that, I mean, I've studied enough things that, you know, I don't have to see a UFO to believe in them, okay, because I have enough evidence on other forms. However, the second and third UFO I ever saw in my life, I was standing next to Stan Romanek.
Amazing. How about that? How about that? Claude, I want to talk with you about some examples of subtle energy and some of the people who use this and have you comment on that. It's a fascinating story. In our final hour, we'll open up the phone lines, questions with Dr. Claude Swanson, and also perhaps share some of your stories, like the one that I got several years ago when the two cars were ready to collide and they went through each other with not a scratch on the car or the occupants of the vehicles. We'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Claude Swanson. His latest work is called Life Force. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Claude John Swanson, our special guest right here on Coast to Coast, author of Life Force. Claude, let's talk a little bit about these subtle energy practitioners, how they got to where they are and what they do. And, of course, one of the big names is John of God in Brazil. What do we know of him?
He's been in practice in Brazil for decades, and he's quite famous at this point. There's a small town called Abajania, which is a couple hours outside of Brasilia, so it's in the internal part of Brazil. And hundreds of people come every day to to be healed there. And I had friends who'd been down there when years ago and had amazing, very positive experiences with him, but I didn't know what to expect. And he's the overall format is fairly religious. He's a what they call a spiritist, which is a movement that is centered in Brazil. People who allow spirits to take over their bodies during their ceremonies, and in his case, about 31 different departed priests, monks, doctors, a lot of whom, I think most of whom are known, their identities are known. They take over his body during the healing. And what happens is he doesn't have to be able to see the person. He doesn't have to really be able to touch them. The spirit's supposed to do all the work. But he does many what he calls visible operations. He'll take a kitchen knife or a scalpel or some crude instrument and work on them and do things that would normally kill a person or give them some horrible disease.
Right.
If the people get well. So there's a track record now of hundreds of people per day for many, many years that supposedly, in many cases, miraculous healings. Now, he doesn't say that everyone is healed. In fact, we know that everyone is not healed who goes there. What he says is that it has to do with their own karma, their own life path, that the disease itself is a form of learning. And if you heal someone without them learning the lesson, they'll get something else.
They say he's treated up to, indirectly and directly, 15 million people during the past 40 years. 15 million, Claude.
Yep. Yeah. If you look at the rate they go per day, it seems possible to me. When I went down there, I'd been on Art Bell. You know, Art interviewed me years ago.
Right.
And asked me that question. He said, if you had some terrible illness, what would you do? And I said, I'd get a ticket to Brazil. And he cross-examined me on this pretty closely. And some lady called in who had some skeptical things to say about John of God. And I could not really answer her because I didn't have, you know, I didn't have any direct experience. And then Art led on as how, is it his sister or his daughter, I forget which, is down there, lives there. That's what he said at the end of the interview, which was, you know, another surprise. Anyway, so I thought after that I better get some more evidence before writing about him in my book. So I spent about 3 weeks down there. The first thing you notice is that before you go, if you check on the internet, there are all kinds of terrible stories, which, you know, would make you decide never to go. I went ahead anyway, and the first intimation I had that something was not as the stories had portrayed is in the taxi drive into the village. I went through a wall of energy, and I am not very sensitive to energy. I didn't know that such things existed, but after you go through one, you know they exist. And it was like I'm sitting in the taxi, and all of a sudden, everything gets quiet. There's this wonderful, sweet, loving energy in the air. And I felt kind of like my idea of what heaven might be. I mean, it was a very pleasant feeling. And that feeling remained with me for the 3 weeks that I stayed in Abidjania. And I learned later, well, I have a friend who tried to visit me. She was very adept at going out of body. She tried to go out of body from Tucson on three different occasions. And she says, I don't know what it is. I'm usually good at this, and I keep bouncing off. I can't get in. And I asked people there, and they all nodded and said, well, yeah, there's an energy shield around Abidjania to keep spirits out because people who are there being healed have their chakras open the whole time they're there. They don't want spirits coming in interfering. So, you know, this stuff, and then the last piece of that, well, there are two more pieces of my experience. Number one, when I was staying there, I would interview people, dozens of people, ask about their stories, and I found an awful lot of them, a high percentage, had some kind of miraculous story to tell about things that have happened to them, being cured of incurable diseases, et cetera.
Remarkable.
And then the last piece was when I had my own one before John of God, I didn't have much that I knew that was wrong, but I said, well, you know, do whatever, and they sent me for an operation, an invisible operation, which means the spirits. I didn't think anything happened. Went back to my room, and I collapsed on the bed, was unable to move for 24 hours.
Wow, you were exhausted?
I wasn't tired. I mean, I had not been tired. There's no reason why I should be tired. But this is apparently what happens to everyone who has an invisible operation. They collapse on the bed. They lie pretty much stationary for a day. And meanwhile, I could feel sharp little fingers or instruments in my abdomen. And it was not fun. And I kept trying to – I don't sleep on my back normally. I roll on my side.
Yeah.
I could not do that. It hurt too much. I had to lay on my back. And I kind of felt that, okay, the spirits are telling me that they're real. They're, like, proving it to me. And if I don't feel it, they'll poke harder. So I kind of got it in the end. And I know it's a strange and remarkable feeling if you haven't been through it, but it was like, you know, the spirits run this place. And I get it now. So that's my take on John of God.
How does it work? What's he tapping into? How's he doing it?
Well, I think we're in a time, and obviously there have been earlier times when this is true too, where we have to recognize that spirits are real, they exist, and they can affect things in the physical world. And part of this, as a scientist trying to understand it, I would say, well, it's the torsion field, which has aspects of consciousness about it. It's a nonlinear field which can hold together and form conscious beings. So spirits can be made from a torsion field of the right type. So that's as a scientist. But the bottom line is that everything is not matter, and matter does not tell the whole story about what's out there.
Do you believe that these people have a gift from God or just knowledge of use?
You mean someone like John of God?
Yes.
I would say that their access comes from a much higher level of wisdom than I'm able to judge. So if they say it's God, that's fine with me. You know, these higher levels of spirit, I'm convinced that they exist, and it's a level that I can't really, you know, I would have to be at that level to understand it, you know. If you can't do it, then it's unlikely that one has that level. So I think I can't really explain beyond that. I mean, we're kind of in an area here where science starts to fizzle out. We've kind of gone about as far as we can go at the moment. But it seems as though they have a contract with the spirits, and where the spirits work through them, and they are a vessel, but that, as John of God has said, he doesn't have to do the operations. He could just say, you're all healed, you know, or as far as I'm concerned, I would say, well, the spirits are probably actually doing the work anyway. But he is sort of there as a meeting place or an intermediary. And I'm sure there are people who understand this far better than I do. So, you know, I'm kind of beyond my level of competence here.
Well, but at the same time, you're astute enough to know that there's more to real science than meets the eye.
Yes, and I think maybe one of the best tools that I have, and we all have, is our feelings, which is part of our intuition, you know. And it's a certain feeling, just like when you go into a sacred space, you go to a place that has a very special energy, you can tell. And maybe we don't know quite why it has that level of energy, why it affects us, but we can tell that something is special. And that's what I was aware of.
Claude, who is Mohandri Trivedi?
He is an Indian that I came to know last year through Professor Rustam Roy at Penn State. Rustam Roy is the Pew Professor of Material Science. He's sort of one of the founders of material science almost in America, a big program, 1,000 papers. And he's also of Indian heritage, as is Mr. Trivedi. And he began working with him and got verification of certain abilities, the ability to change water so that Raman spectra, Raman backscatter spectra, were altered and things like that. And he also became aware of these other experiments that Trivedi was doing in India over a 10 or 12 year period, working with agricultural colleges, causing changes in crops. One of the classic cases was a spongy tissue disease, where mangoes look beautiful on the outside, but inside they can have their pulp can have a spongy quality, can be bitter, and be, you know, you can't sell them. So they did an experiment with Mr. Trivedi, and you take half the field, we'll take half the field, we'll take half the field and treat it the way we normally do, fertilizer, etc. For Trivedi's half, he just did a blessing, so about a 4-minute blessing. For the next 4 years, his side of the field had no spongy tissue disease.
For 4 years?
Yes. Still ongoing, I understand. Higher vitamin C quality, several percent more mass, heavier fruit, etc. The same thing was done, same type of thing was done with cashews with similar effect. So there have been a variety of them, 40 different plant species that they've tested, and they've all come up with effects of this type. So he's actually in America now, and looking for a scientist, I think, to do experiments with. I think that's what's really needed now. I think for me, he's an unusual case, because most of the yogis who go through normal yoga training, it's a much more spiritual oriented path, and they usually will not work with scientists. Mr. Trivedi did not go through the yogic training, but seems to have been given a message or a some kind of spiritual guidance that this is what he's supposed to be doing. And so hopefully the only caveat here is that when someone has abilities of this type and we don't know exactly how they got them, that they can also lose them anytime. So we don't know how long this will continue, but at least for the moment, it's a very interesting case, an opportunity for scientists to look at the power of consciousness.
Do you find that these practitioners are generally good people, or have you ever stumbled across any of them that one would call pure evil?
Fortunately, I've never stumbled across a person of that description, but I do acknowledge that the ability to have PK powers or to affect things around us seems to be something that exists both in good people and people that are not so good. In fact, I just heard a story today from my cab driver that would be an example of that. I don't know if you want to hear it or not.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he was
temperate, of course. Children are listening.
Bob. Well, yeah, I know. he was working with some Mexican laborers. They were picking fruit. I've kind of forgotten the details here, but he has quite an interest in the paranormal himself, and for some reason, he began telling them that he was basically a Mexican witch doctor. He had these powers, these occult powers, which is, of course, a pretty scary thing.
Sure.
Now, I don't know why he felt the need to do this, but that night, he said he woke up around 2 or 3 in the morning, and it was the strangest thing. The room was totally dark, and there was something very strange about it, and he saw this figure floating in the air, and it was basically a Mexican witch doctor. He could feel his soul, his being pulled out of his body, and he didn't know what to do, and he called on Jesus, and the creature vanished just like that, and he's talked to other people since then, and this is not that unusual. So, these are strange. You know, as a scientist, what do you do with something like this? But as a person who, you know, is telling what he experienced, it's a cautionary tale that there are spirits that might have a variety of different feelings about, you know, good and evil and what's appropriate.
Let's take a step backward for a moment. We both agree this exists. It's out there. You can tap into it. It's part of this existence. Let's talk about the divine creator for a moment. Mm-hmm. There is no way all of this could be put together by accident, by random, by just a roll of the dice. There's no way.
Probably true.
Is that the physicist talking? The physicist just said probably.
Well, you know, Einstein had his... the difficulty is that as a scientist, that we're talking about areas that are beyond our training and even beyond our definition of what God is. We have to first agree on what God is. For me...
I don't think we can agree to that.
Probably not. For me, the best I can say is that I have met people... First of all, I believe that spirits exist. I believe that we have access to higher dimensional intelligence. We have guidance oftentimes, if an intuitive type, from higher dimensional beings who seem wiser than we are. And I've met people who seem possessed of a higher dimensional intelligence and a higher dimensional wisdom. So I can extrapolate from that to a universal source that's above all. You know? But that's about the best I could do.
I've got to believe that there is a higher power somehow. I just can't comprehend the fact that this was all an act of random, that there was chance. And even the fact, even if you believe in the Big Bang Theory, and I have my questions about how that started.
Me too.
The fact is something did start. And that alone should tell you that there's something else going on here.
I agree with that. I think what I like is more the... what I guess I would call the Hindu or the yogic perspective.
Which is?
Well, that we're all here to learn, that we incarnate in the human form to learn, and there are these higher dimensional levels on which our consciousness resides in between incarnations, and so we make these paths up and then paths back, and we each time we sort of learn more lessons and become wiser.
We're all Jonathan Livingston seagulls, aren't we?
Well, I mean, what I like about that is that even misfortunes and tragedies have a positive side, and that, you know, that we're all kind of getting better, you know, at our own rate as we do that.
Well, I don't know. It's a big picture.
You're asking tough questions here.
It is a big picture. Well, we're going to take questions next hour from listeners and also stories. I'd like them to share with us stories similar to the one where the two cars almost collided and they did not. We'll do that next. With Dr. Claude Swanson, our special guest tonight with his latest work, Life Force, I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on coasttocoastam.com. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. We've got Claude Swanson. We've got you and your stories as well. You've looked a little bit at the dowsing and how it works. Let's get your thoughts on that, Claude, before we go to calls.
Sure. Over the years, I've come to know some very good dowsers, Louis Matasia, Walt Woods, and Raymond Grace, among them. And it's always amazed me what a good dowser can do. I used to think that they were sensing the mineral energy under the ground, and that's true in some cases, but a lot of dowsing uses maps alone. I had a friend who was a former Exxon executive building a refinery in Puerto Rico, and he used a map dowser in Paris. The fellow used high-resolution maps, never left his apartment, as far as I'm aware, and only got paid when he was successful, and he was... very successful, quite wealthy. When he located water, it was very high density sources, very rich sources of water. So that got my attention to the idea that dowsing does not have to use energies that are sensible. My best theory for dowsing is that it's really a psychic process, and that it's based on the muscle tension in the body, which is part of our parasympathetic system. And when you're asking yes-no questions, and if you're getting a no and a no and a no, and all of a sudden you get a yes,
that's right.
Actual changes the structure of the muscle tension in the body, and your dowsing instrument, pendulum, or L-rods, et cetera, are just an amplifier. They show that change. So that's my...
Yet something goes through your body to give you that, I think, knowledge unknowingly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is our aura. This is our higher dimensional energies in the body that affect the muscle tension through that connection.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Richmond, Virginia to get things going. Josie, you are on Coast to Coast. Hi, Josie.
Hello, Claude, and hello, George.
Hi.
Hi, Josie.
I missed you at the X conference.
I was there.
You were there, George, but Claude wasn't.
Oh, you're talking to Claude. Sorry. Sorry,
well,
George.
I'll leave the room.
I saw
you there, yeah. That's true. Well, anyhow, I lost track of your phone number, Claude. You know, Claude and I are friends.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that explains it.
So, you know, you'll have to call me. Anyhow, I'm...
Hey, Josie, can I interject for a second? Josie and I met at the Bruton Parish dig, which is a very interesting little side story you might want to tell him about, or some other time, maybe.
Go ahead, tell him, Joe.
Well, there's a controversy about the Shakespeare's papers. Who was Shakespeare? Who wrote the papers, et cetera? And there, Manly Palmer Hall's wife wrote a very interesting book proposing that Sir Francis Bacon was involved in this small group who actually wrote the plays. And there was some evidence based on cryptography and cryptograms in the Bruton Parish churchyard to argue that those papers might be buried in a vault there. So this had to do with an expedition, an archaeological expedition.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we met.
Super. Well, go ahead, Josie.
And the funny thing is that it was such a controversy, and my cousin was the lawyer for the church. I mean, the whole thing was... And all these New Age people popped out of there. Some of them, one of them, and I really smelled bad. I mean, there was all this.
Claude, I feel like I'm listening in on a private conversation here.
Well, I mean, it's a good story anyway, no matter who's listening in.
But just a few of us.
I just have a short little story of going to the X conference during this time of Mercury retrograde, which I think is probably the worst Mercury retrograde period that I have ever witnessed, starting with all of that ash falling in April, and then going through all of these events that have happened in the earth changes with floods and earthquakes and you name it, and the oil spill. But I, you know, the earth, it was just about to go retrograde. Here I was on the road late for the first party because of various other little delays that happened. And, I pray before I get on the highway. And, you know, I just put light around me, around the car and down the road ahead. And then unless I have need of one, may there be no policeman around, a little thing like that. And usually that works just fine, except, I was bombing down the highway at about 90-some miles an hour.
Jeez.
And as soon as I saw the policeman, it was too late. And when he approached me, though, it was the attitude was. So, you know, I think there's an effect to the prayer, even though, yes, there was a policeman and he did stop me. And he saw that I had a just expired inspections ticket, and he was pleasant to deal with, and we had a nice exchange of conversation. And he then offered me a choice of either
jail
the speeding
or
ticket or a ticket for the expired inspection. And of course, I chose the expired inspection, which was a lot better deal than to choose going
90, you know. Yeah.
And so I thought that maybe I needed to be stopped. I always figure that I'm at a place wherever it is I'm supposed to be is where I'm supposed to be, you know. And I kind of think that these little things have a – and by the way, Claude, I want to thank you for helping me understand about the scientific method. I really – when we and I had conversations, I knew nothing about scientific method and all of that, and I, you know, grown to know and understand and appreciate that a lot more than I did in the past. Of course, we all get a little more wisdom as we get past, say, 60 years old. You're almost there, George. Not yet.
Oh, I'm knocking on the door, Josie. But I, you know what? I think you somehow summoned up the police officer. And you know how sometimes that happens, Claude. You think about it. You know what you're doing.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, boom, there go the results. I think people do it to themselves.
Yep.
Josie, thanks for the call. Next up, we'll go to Kevin in Omaha, Nebraska, first-time caller. Kevin, go ahead. You're on with us.
Yes, George, this is Kevin. I'm a first-time caller. I love your show.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm actually going to bring it back when you guys were talking about the Big Bang Theory.
Sure.
One thing, I don't know if any of you, either of you, have read the book by Scott M. called God's Debris.
Yes.
Yes. Now, that book had a really interesting theory on it. It was basically stating, you know, in most religions, how there's an omnipotent God, meaning, you know, he could create anything, do anything. He's all powerful. And so a God of that power would easily get bored because nothing would be a challenge to him. So if you think about it, what would be a challenge to him? And basically what it's coming up with is he would try to attempt to destroy himself.
And
that would be the only.
Well, you know, you're right. And also that philosophy in his work was that the simplest explanation is always the best explanation. That's
yeah,
what
exactly.
I got out of that. You too?
Yes, I agree. And I just found it really interesting because, I mean, an omnipotent God would probably get bored. And if there was an omnipotent God, it would be a challenge to destroy yourself. And what it's saying is when he did that, it created everything. And every time a soul passes, it's just himself bringing himself back together.
Do you find, Claude, that wrestling with science, with what you now know, you're in conflict with yourself?
Well, let me argue with myself about that for a second.
Yeah.
I think that for me, curiosity and the desire to understand is probably dominant. So as long as I'm on the path of trying to learn and trying to figure it out, it doesn't really bother me to not have the final answer. I'm still looking. I'm sure there's conflict that goes on there, but I don't feel troubled by it. I think I'm probably more troubled when there are people who seem so sure they have the answer, they don't want to look, especially when there's, you know, really blatant examples to indicate that they don't have the final answer. So as long as we're on the path, it doesn't bother me too much.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. Mary Michael in Mill Creek, Utah, west of the Rockies. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question for Claude.
Okay.
A quick story and a quick question.
Let's go with the story first.
Okay. First of all, I've always been able to see auras since I was 5. My parents sent me to a psychiatrist. But anyway, I was healing my husband one time. He had a kidney stone that was 5 centimeters, couldn't go up or down. So they had scheduled emergency surgery. I had been working on him with energy healing. And when he was at the hospital, he'd been given the drug, but they hadn't cut him open yet. And they were trying to find it, and it was gone. And the doctor was so frustrated, he said, "Where is it?" My husband, you know, being drugged, said, "Well, maybe my wife took it." So, but my question is, and I also have healed cancers, things like that. But my main question is about the field that you were talking about. I've been able lately to see through solid objects.
Mm-hmm.
When it first happened, I was just kind of amazed. You know, you see the outline of a solid object, but you can see through it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this could be part of the torsion field that you have been discussing.
Could be. could very well be that you're, because we all have torsion fields as part of our own body's energy, and the more we're sensitive to that field, then the more we can pick up the torsion field outside the body. So that would make sense to me.
Okay. That's nothing to worry about. I've tried covering one eye than the other, and it doesn't seem to
be. I think that's really wonderful. I have a couple of other friends who have been sort of learning these skills, too, and I get little updates every so often. I think it's really wonderful.
Claude, you've looked at crop formations. How do you tie that into some of the things you've researched?
First of all, I think the crop circles were the first time I experienced subtle energy directly. I'd done a little bit of Reiki and trying to feel energy around the body, so I had a little bit of practice. But in crop circles, that energy is amplified. The crops are created and formed in a way to create subtle energy patterns that your body responds to, so the torsion field in your body can feel. And sometimes in some formations, it's almost like a force that pushes against you or pushes toward you. In other cases, it just activates higher energy consciousness. So I had the feeling that these patterns are created to educate us about subtle energy, to make us more sensitive to it. And what I came away with is the realization that they are very much like the much older temples that are in that part of England, because there's a certain part of England where most of the crop circles still occur. And it happens that there are ley lines in the ground, there are underwater water formations, and certain other formations that make the conduction, the carrying of subtle energy, it's very easy to work with it there. And so the old temples, like Stonehenge and like Avebury, take advantage of those patterns of energy, and the crop circles do as well. So to me, that just opened me up to this whole big question of the energy in the land, the sacred energy, sacred sites in the land. And once I was aware of it, then I realized, well, gee, these things have been around for thousands of years. There were cultures building these stone monuments thousands of years ago, and in fact, you find them all around the world. So this knowledge of chi is not a modern thing. It's a very ancient thing, and we're just kind of waking up to it. And so crop circles helped wake me up to it.
All right, let's go to Ken in Chesaning, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ken, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Claude.
Hi.
I had a quick story and a quick question, if I could, please.
Sure.
When I was earlier in life, you know, I always had, you know, these feelings, so on and so forth, were, you know, the events that came true, so on and so forth. Later on in life, I had two close head injuries, and they was in heightened from the injuries. My question to you on this particular theory that you have is, do you think that Tesla also carried some of them theories, and how long is this information going to be suppressed and put away in different formats? Because truly the shamans and the Orientals and the Asian culture has carried all that information with them, and it's just taken this long, how long, for the Western civilization to come to knowledge about a lot of this. I'll take my answers off there if I could.
Okay.
Well, I believe, and I certainly hope, that we're at that point where it's starting to happen. Right now, not only do you have all of the torsion work that's going on in Russia, but the Germans have been more and more sensitive to it. The Eastern Europeans know about as much as the Russians do about it. So it's kind of spreading from Asia across Europe toward us. At this point, there are bioenergy devices, various types of healing devices that have come out of Germany and Russia that use torsion. So they're making inroads into this country in that way. And I think what we really need are some good torsion measuring devices, something practical that can measure torsion levels accurately. There are several devices that are technologies that exist that can measure torsion, but right to this point, they're not really very convenient. So I think if we can get a good device, I think that would probably open this up for the scientists and engineers to take a serious look at it.
And we need more and more scientists like you, Claude, to look at this. We're just not getting enough, are we?
Not yet. but I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic.
Well, I hope that happens, too. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls in just a moment with Dr. Claude Swanson. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, synchronizeduniverse.com. And, of course, his latest work is called Life Force. And this is through the mind of a physicist now. That's the important thing. He's, you know, he's not someone who's just practicing. He's an actual scientist who believes that there is such things as psychokinesis, teleportation, out-of-body experiences, and the use of that field. So we'll be back with Dr. Claude Swanson, your final questions, your final stories, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Claude, explain to us what a ley line is.
You know, ley lines were not really known until about 100 years ago in the West, when aerial photographers began noticing these straight-line features that old landmarks like churches and stone circles tended to fall on a line. Oftentimes there were marks in the countryside that all seemed to fit on these straight lines. Dowsers found that dowsing was the best way to locate them, but it looks as though they're very, very ancient. They're probably thousands of years old, and they carry the subtle energy, the chi current, through the ground. And they were probably built by ancient societies that, for whom the flow of this energy in the landscape was a really important part of life. You can go to the Chinese, like the Feng Shui masters. That's what they do. They control the flow of the chi energy in the landscape. That type of skill apparently existed in many countries, including England and the Southwest. The Native Americans have stone circles and similar designs. So in old times, they thought a lot about how to make that energy flow in the land to help keep our societies healthy and happy and prosperous.
Well, you know, have you heard of Edward Leetskolnin down at Coral Castle?
Yes, I've been down there.
Okay, fascinating.
Yes.
And he, I believe, built that on a ley line.
Didn't know that. Didn't know that. I've been down there and I've puzzled about it, but I don't have any answers. He was amazing.
He tied into it. Let's go to the final calls. Let's go to Maui in Hawaii. Joan, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Joan.
Aloha to you.
Aloha
and Dr.
to you
Johnson.
Too. Sure thing.
Hey, I got to tell you, I'm a longtime listener and I've never called in before, so I'm going to do my best, but my heart is just about to leap out of here this evening. And I said, I know I have to tell the story. It's about an angelic it's a phenomenal paranormal experience that I had related to driving about 15 years ago. I was visiting my family on the mainland and had I have three siblings there. All of them have children, and I had each taken one child from each of my siblings with me to the reunion. It was out of state, out in Kansas. Drove up there on the turnpike. We had a great time in the reunion on the weekend. And so the night at the end of the reunion that night, we were all tired but had to get up early the next morning to get back on the turnpike and get home, and I had to catch a flight back to Hawaii. So I had everything planned out, had a lot of extra time and all that, but I think long story short, all the three kids were asleep, and I was trying to go to sleep, but I kept having this vision of a terrible car accident.
Oh,
and this went on for about an hour. I tried everything I knew. I got up, walked around, you know, I prayed, I did all that. And so finally I said, well, duh, just put the white light around it. So I did do that, and I was able to go to sleep immediately. Well, I got up, we got up about 5 in the morning, wanted to leave early. Everything was ready. Got the kids in the car all strapped in and everything. They were about 10, 12, and 14, their ages. We got on, got out there, got on the turnpike, and I don't know how many miles it was into the turnpike, maybe 20 miles, and was going whatever the speed limit was. and came up over the crest of a little hill, an elongated hill, and there was an overpass ahead. Right beyond the crest of that little hill, there was debris from a car accident.
Mm.
Making me shake to say it again. I'll do my best. But there was a bumper that was all, it was kind of crinkled up, and other pieces, I think there was a tire and other pieces of the car laying there on the road, and I thought, oh, my God, there's no way I can get over that. You know, if I swerve, I'm going to turn, roll the car.
Sure.
And if I keep going straight, I'm going to hit it, and it's going to flip me over. And I said, oh, I'm going to wipe out somebody in my, you know, each someone in my family from each of my brothers and sisters. And it just got to me. And I thought, we're out. We're gone. And the thing of it is, it happened so fast that I didn't know what happened until I looked behind me, and I had somehow gone through that and ended up on the other side of the underpass. In the meantime, under the underpass was the wrecked vehicle. It was very dark. It was 5 or 5:30 in the morning. The car was sitting there very quiet, and I had an ominous feeling that there was nobody in there alive. So I found myself right beyond the overpass at that time. I pulled to the side to get myself together, and I was trying to think, what am I going to do here? I've got these three kids in the car. I need to go back and investigate that. I was quite in a quandary, and about that time I saw three cars come up to the underpass. They were coming from the other direction, and they stopped to help. But I felt it was just quite an experience to know that, how did I come across there? And I haven't told this to many people because I don't know why. I think I just tried to get through it at the time. The kids, one of them woke up and said, what's going on? And I said, I don't know what just happened. But thank God somebody was watching over us. How we went through that, I don't know. The car that I was driving had not been hit by any debris. We had not bounced. There's just no way we could have gone over that bumper especially.
That's another one of these cases. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's just like the other story, Claude. Isn't
yeah,
it
absolutely.
Amazing?
You know, the fellow on the front of my book, Rich Berry, who was a spiritual advisor and an old remote viewing friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
Had this habit, this ability to give me advice about future science, and he's quite clairvoyant. I had something like that with a car he was driving that would not shift into the lower gears, and he had very little money. I'm trying to get back to a 700-mile trip back to Missouri, and he was really sweating it, and a friend of his called up and reminded him of a Bartlett technique. This is Richard Bartlett. They both had Bartlett's training course in two-pointing, which is a technique to do this type of thing, of causing these shifts. And he forgot about it, but when she said it, he tried it, and within a couple of minutes, his car stopped having the problems. The gears began shifting correctly, and he made it back to Missouri without any problems, and it's never happened again since then. So, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, we have this ability to shift these dimensions and change reality in remarkable ways.
Let's go to Roswell, New Mexico, east of the Rockies. Hey, Leonard, go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, that story you were telling about the guy who had that went through that car. I thought you were talking about me. I said, I never called the station before.
Same thing,
almost,
huh?
Almost identical thing, yeah.
I mean, when it happened, Leonard, I mean, what did you do? Did you just say, there's no way? I should be dead, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I've told the story to people a couple of times, but, you know, they go, oh, yeah, right, you know.
All right, tell us what happened.
Well, I'm 59 now. I just got out of the Army. This is in 73. And so I was whooping up a little bit, you know, and I just bought this old pickup truck. It was a 1950 Ford. And you couldn't downshift it because the transmission wasn't that good. And it was late at night back in New Jersey. They had these long, straight roads, you know, you go for about quarter or half a mile before you hit a light, and they stay green forever.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So I was hauling it down there. I want to see how fast this truck will go, you know. So I was a little bit late, you know, so I floored it. And I had the gas pedal all the way down to the floor, and I had that thing probably up to about 90, I'd say. And there was no way I could, you had to use the brakes to stop, you know. And that was a heavy truck. It was 1954. So I'm hauling along, and way down the line there, on the straight road, you know, I could see the green light. It was green, you know, under the road. So I know I can make that easy. So I'm, you know, I'm hauling, and on the side of the road, this is like about after 2 in the morning, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Pitch black?
Yeah. I was, you know, there's no, not too many lights out there, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm driving along, and I'm hauling, and there's this old Lincoln sitting on the right-hand side of the intersection waiting for the light to change. And this guy jumped the light.
Oh.
And so I'm hauling through there. You know, I was about maybe about half the length of a football field from the intersection. I'm doing about 90, right? And I'm in the, there were two lanes. I was in the fast lane. And the guy pulled out. He jumped the light when it turned amber. He didn't see me coming, I guess.
Oh.
And the last thing I saw was that guy. He froze and slammed on the brakes right in front of me.
You saw his eyes like a deer in the lights, huh?
Oh, he was staring right at me. He was in shock. Yeah, the last thing I saw was he had both hands frozen on the handle on the steering wheel. He was staring right at me. And I was bearing down right on his door. This is the old kind of the double doors, the suicide doors, the real long old Lincolns. So no way I could do anything, you know. And it's just like the woman who just called you said, an instant later, I was on the other side of the intersection. The first thing I did is look in my rearview mirror because I couldn't figure out what happened. I said, you know, I should be dead, you know. I should have wiped everything out, you know.
And he should have been dead, yeah.
Yeah. The car was still sitting there. The guy was still holding on to the steering wheel looking in the direction where I was coming from. And I was still in the fast lane doing 90 with my foot on it, with my foot on the gas to the floor, right? That truck wasn't even swerving or nothing. I mean, I was dead on. There's no way you could go around him, you know. This is a long truck, a long car, you know. It's an old Lincoln. And it was just an instant later, I just, like,
and there was no ramp there. You didn't go over him.
No, it was just an intersection on a, you know, main road back there in New Jersey, you know. Until I was living in New Jersey, this was in 73. So, you know, and there wasn't a lot of traffic. So, you know, and like I said, it was late at night. But, I mean, I went right through that car. And that guy was still looking the other way. I mean, I saw the first thing I did. I was looking in the rearview mirror, and I see the back of his head. He still had both hands on the steering wheel. The guy was in shock, you know. And
he probably still is, Leonard.
You know? Oh yeah. I mean, the thing about it is I was, you know, I was bearing right down on his door. That was the last thing I remembered seeing. And then an instant later, I was like 20 feet away on the other side of the intersection, still barreling along down the lane, you know.
Well, Claude, let me ask you this, based on Leonard's story and the one I told you earlier, and Leonard, thank you. What is it, this is all conjecture on your part, but what is it that allows that to happen? I mean, is it an angelic thing where somebody says, you know, I want to save Leonard and I want to save this other guy in the car? Or are there helpers who say, no, this isn't Leonard's time, so let's get him through this? Or is there something else out there that basically dematerializes these objects? That's what happened. These are physical objects. They collided, but they went through each other. It was almost as if every particle from his car and every particle from the other car somehow didn't touch as they all went through each other.
Yeah, they all become unsynchronized.
Yeah.
They're not synchronized with one another as they normally would be. So something causes them to shift synchronization, so they pass right through.
But why?
I don't know.
It's an honest answer.
I do believe it's spiritual. I do believe it is higher dimensional.
You do think it's spiritual?
I do, yeah. And it's something like what you say, that it was not their time.
I wonder if he willed it. I wonder if Leonard willed it. Or I wonder if the other person in the car had some incredible force belief. He did it.
I believe that people can do that. I believe that there are cases where people are able to will it like that. And who did it, I don't know.
But when I was...
But it happens more often than, you know, like this show. I mean, it happens more often than you would think. And when people start looking for these cases, it is amazing how often they come up.
When I was in St. Louis, I must have been 33 years old, okay? A million years ago. I'm driving, and it's got some patches of ice on what we called Highway 4064.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming from way out in the west. I go up a little hill, and I come down this hill, and we have more patches of ice down there. And all of a sudden, I see maybe five or six cars all turned in different directions. At that time, that highway was just two lanes.
Mm-hmm.
One way, two lanes the other way. So there's two lanes on this highway. I'm going down, and there are five or six cars in both these lanes, mm-hmm. spaced out. All of them turned, slipping, turned the other way. That's how patchy the ice was. A race car driver would have a difficult time maneuvering through that.
Mm-hmm.
I tap my brakes a little bit. Not a lot. You can't, because you'll go sliding like crazy. Just to try to slow the car down. You know, I'm coming up over this hill, and lo and behold, there's ice, there's cars, everybody's turned around, nobody's going. And I said, I'm going to crash. There's no way I'm going to get out of this one. My car hits a patch of ice. It starts spinning like an ice skater in an Olympic meet. And as God is my judge, Claude, this car spins around all the cars. I mean, it's coming up to hit one. It does a spin.
Uh-huh.
It comes up to the next one, which is more toward the right. Yeah. It spins to the left, and it just keeps spinning back and forth. It went through all of them and then ended up facing the direction I was going on dry pavement, and off I went. It was a miracle.
Yep.
I don't know who pulled me through it, but yep. something did.
Yeah, I believe that.
You just shake your head. That's all you can do. But it's a story I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And Leonard will never forget. Yeah. And the guy who called me 2 years ago, he'll never forget.
Yeah.
I just don't know what does it. And I don't know if science will ever be able to tell us that, will it?
Yeah. I don't either. I don't either. But those stories happen a lot. And we have to pay attention to it.
Let's get a quick one out of Tammy in Olean, New York. Go ahead, Tammy. About a minute or so for you.
Hi. Yeah, I had something similar happen to me about 4 years ago, but it was a little different. I was on my way to work from one location to another, and they didn't know for sure that I was coming there. They called the place that I was and asked if I would soon be getting there, and I'm thinking, okay, I just, like, called you 5 minutes ago and told you that I was going to be there. And when I arrived there, they were like, oh, we know you were coming. We know you're coming. I'm thinking, I just talked to you like 10 minutes ago. But when I looked at the clock, it had like a half an hour had passed. And I was like, well, there's no way it took me that long to get there. I'm like, where in the world was I? You know, what happened in between this half an hour? There was no earthly reason for it to have taken me that long. And I've always wondered, like, something bizarre happened in between that time. I've never talked to anybody about this before. I don't know how to explain it. It was like there was like no reason for that much of time to have passed before I got there. And I thought, you know, I just talked to you about this. And when I got there, it was like half an hour later, and I never could figure out what happened to that time period.
Missing time that you'll never find again.
Exactly. And I always thought that was like the oddest thing. I could never figure that out, but I've always had this odd thing, like I've never felt like other people think about stuff, you know, before anyway. And I don't know, I just thought it was very strange, and I don't know, this is kind of a little bit different than your other guests have called about, and
well,
I don't know if you have anything to say about that.
Where does the missing time go, Claude?
Well, it must go to other people, because I have friends who are shaman and who are mystics, who have other experiences. They're all a little bit different from one another, but in some cases, I have a friend who an hour-long trip took her about 4 minutes.
It is truly unbelievable. Claude, thanks for being on the program and your remarkable work once again. His first book was The Synchronized Universe. This one, Life Force.